Kelly Swan sat in the shade of the main tent where the workers came to eat, rest, and replenish their water. The sand and dirt chafed at her skin uncomfortably, and all she could think about was how badly she wanted a bath and a comfortable bed. She was not counting on seeing either anytime soon. Getting into the camp had been easy. After she'd gotten directions in Dunhuang, she'd purchased an enduro motorcycle and driven to within 5 miles of the dig. She'd left the motorcycle buried under a tarp that might preserve it just in case she needed it later. She'd also buried her weapons just outside of the camp after using them to eliminate Guy's spies. She considered it a warning of sorts, and if she was lucky, it might even draw out Guy himself.
Miss Chow?
It took Kelly a moment to remember the name she'd decided to use while in the camp. She looked up at Po, the old man who served as chief among the local population brought in as labor from Dunhuang. He was thin and heavily wrinkled from the sun. He wore ill-fitting wraparound sunglasses and a Yankees baseball cap that was at least a size too large for him.
Yes.
Do you feel well?
I'm fine.
Po squatted beside her and clapped a bony hand to her forehead. Kelly kept from breaking his arm through sheer effort of will. Reaching with his other hand, he handed her a bottle of water.
You are very warm. Very warm.
It is very warm outside.
You keep drinking water. It's a long way to hospital if you get sunstroke.
Kelly uncapped the bottle and drank. The old man smiled at her, then moved on to check the rest of his workers. He had a position on the dig site as more of a morale booster than as a laborer. He managed people and made sure the things Professor Hu wanted done were done in a timely manner. He hadn't stepped outside of the tent for more than a few moments when he came rushing back in.
I just received word. Professor Hu's coming back. He's bringing a body with him.
Everyone in the tent rushed out to see. Kelly joined them, knowing what to expect. She'd already seen the vultures gathering. She shaded her eyes with her hand and watched as the camels plodded toward the camp. Professor Hu was in the lead. A body was slung over the saddle pommel.
The professor found two men up in the mountains. Thank the gods! One of them is still barely alive.
Worry gnawed at Kelly's stomach. She'd been certain of the kills 2 nights ago and didn't see how one of them could have survived. But there had been something in the cave, some kind of vapor that had made her feel woozy. Running on so little sleep for so long, she was overcome and had made a hasty exit before confirming the job. Cautiously, Kelly made her way to the front of the line, staying just behind Po. Professor Hu, his face running with sweat, kicked into his camel, ordering it to kneel. As the large creature did, he held on to the man in front of him. Blood covered the man's midsection.
Oh, help me, please.
Men ran forward to ease the professor's burden.
Ah!
Gently. He's still alive. I want to keep him that way.
Hu lowered the man to a waiting blanket.
Lift!
The men lifted the blanket, using it as a stretcher to carry the wounded man into the main tent and out of the sun. Kelly stayed outside while the rest of the group went in to watch the drama unfold. She walked to the camel that carried the corpse Hu had retrieved. The scars left by the vultures marked the villain's fate clearly. Half of his face and one eye had been eaten away. 3 fingers of one hand were gone. Huge strips of flesh were missing from his back and legs. Kelly noticed a presence and was surprised to see that Song, the second in command of the dig, stood beside her, shaking his head.
Do you know him?
No, I don't.
Are you sure? Because for a minute there, it looked as if you did.
I have seen dead men before, that is all. It just never seems right.
I know. Someone murdered this man and tried to kill the other.
Who would do that?
I don't know. Someone out there. Bandits, maybe.
Song!
It's better not to dwell on something like that.
I know.
Kelly watched him as he turned and went back into the tent. She wondered how long it would be until Guy discovered his men were dead, and how he'd react. In the back seat of the limousine, moving through Shanghai traffic, Guy Kuan Yin studied the belt plaque in his hands. His elation over finally acquiring the artifact was short-lived. It didn't tell him as much as he'd hoped. The inscription on the back had only confused him. It contained a lament by the original maker that the owner of the belt plaque was cursed. There was also a prayer that was supposed to offset the evils that would plague each generation. Glancing through the tinted window, Guy saw that he was at the Old Bank of China. Most of his legitimate business was done in those offices. The two bodyguards seated in front of him moved into position. He could see GZ, the head of his security detail, speak quickly into his radio from his window. When he was assured everything was ready, he opened the door and stepped out. Guy moved out with his bodyguards. As always, he was aware of the vulnerability of being out in the open. The thought didn't bother him. It was testimony to his wealth and power. Guy's bodyguards swept him by the abbreviated landscape lawn and into the building. Across the foyer, G used the specially coded electronic pass key to open one of the private elevators used by the bank officials. Just as the doors began to close, a large, scarred hand slid between them and held them back. The man who owned the hand was over 6 feet tall. He was broad and fierce-looking, with shoulder-length black hair and magnetic black eyes. His goatee was carefully trimmed.
Mr. Guy, I mean you no harm.
G whipped his pistol from under his jacket and pointed it at the tall man's face. If the man was afraid, he didn't show it. His black eyes held Guy's.
I know the secret of the belt plaque. Wait! Do not shoot him.
G didn't move his pistol, but luckily he didn't kill the man either. Guy studied the stranger for a moment, taking in the custom-made Italian suit. He knew perfectly well what a suit like that cost. He smiled widely, revealing rows of perfect white teeth.
And you are?
Garin Braden.
What do you want?
To become your partner in your quest to find the City of Thieves.
How do you know about that place?
I'm a student of history myself, particularly when it pertains to treasure. Is there some place we can talk?
I have an office upstairs.
That would be ideal.
Garin took a step inside the elevator, but just as quickly, G shoved him back outside.
Forgive my security officer's attitude. He's just doing his job. You can meet us on the 8th floor.
Garin didn't move his hand from the elevator door. Guy knew that the man was on the verge of snapping, and he thought it would have been interesting to see who prevailed in such a situation. G flicked open a knife with a serrated blade.
Take your hand back before I take it away from you.
A brief, cold smile crossed Garin's lips. Guy knew if the man had smiled at him in such a manner that he would feel threatened. The expression was as humorless as a shark's grin.
The 8th floor, then. Be glad you're working for my future partner, friend.
Do you know this man?
No.
Guy removed his phone from his pocket.
Lin.
Yes, sir?
See what you can find out about Garin Braden. Now.
Sir, Garin Braden is an entrepreneur from Berlin. He's worth millions.
Put together a complete background check on him. I want it as soon as it's ready.
Yes, sir.
Guy hung up and watched the floor counter. Suspicion and hope warred in his mind. This mysterious man could either be a threat or an opportunity. Garin didn't go to the 8th floor as he'd been instructed. Orders of any kind irritated him, and his natural course of action was to disobey them. He did want to meet with Guy because the man had something he needed, but he didn't want to look desperate for it. After living for 500 years, he'd learned to be patient. The brush-off he'd received from the security man still irked him. At another time, in another place, Garin knew he'd have killed the man for threatening him. Instead, he had put on sunglasses, then went to a small cafe across the street and ordered a coffee. Taking it, he had stepped back outside and gazed up at the tall office building, looking at the windows along the 8th floor. He knew that Guy could hear the street noise around him over the phone connection. He also knew that the man's offices were in the front of the building.
Hello? is it?
It's Garin Braden.
What do you want?
I want to talk to you.
An appointment was made.
Garin scanned the windows. A moment later, one of the curtains pulled to the side, and he made out the security man's face. Garin hoisted his coffee cup in a salute.
I'll be along in a minute.